Have that.
Okay. We do have one word that has been pointed out we have to add. The word finance, it's a small thing. Where it says House File 3900, my name, higher, right above that, where it says Health and Human Services Finance Committee, the finance is the part that's missing. So Albright moves the minutes as corrected. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And opposed, the minutes are approved. That was hard.
Oh.
That's the hardest that I've had so far. But we have people really paying attention, and I appreciate that, Representative Albright, for your help. All right. We have several bills today, and we start with House File 3985, Representative Daniels. The intention is for this bill to be laid over. So, Representative Daniels, as soon as you're comfortable there, you can move your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee, for allowing us to present this bill this afternoon. And I do have an amendment. We get to approve the amendment.
The A18-0702 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we could move that.
Would you like to tell us about it?
Yes, the original bill was quite cumbersome with a lot of details of dollar amounts, and was not really well received. So we're basically taking the Senate language of the amendment to make it much simpler and much smaller scale.
Okay. Any questions? All those in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment is adopted. Okay. Proceed with the discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill would allow, would have the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities develop a plan to increase the usefulness of affordable textbooks and instruction materials. We are asking the Board of Trustees to explore and study registration software plus other systems and methods to disclose and display the cost of all textbooks and instruction materials required for a course prior to registration. The Board will report on the systems and the methods used for the study and establish a goal for the percentage of all courses offered at the state colleges and universities that it will use affordable textbooks and instruction materials. The board then will submit the plan to the chairs and ranking minority members of the legislative committees with jurisdiction over those higher ed by January 2020. Overall, the bill is just our goal is to help the cost of colleges to be more affordable for the students, and then materials and cost of textbooks. That's just a one way that we can approach that. I do have two testifiers with me, if I can present them at this time, Mr. Chair.
Please identify yourself and then begin your testimony. Whoever is first. Welcome.
Hi, my name is Cecilia. Can you hear me? Mm-hmm. Hi, my name is Cecilia Damian. I am the Vice President of Lead MN. Chair Nornes, members of the committee, thank you for taking the time to listen to us today. My name is Cecilia Damian, and I'm the Vice President of Lead MN. The statewide student association representing 180,000 Minnesota State community and technical college students. I'm here today to speak in support of House File 3985. I'd first like to thank Representative Daniels and Minnesota State for working with the student at Lead MN to advance a conversation around affordable textbooks. We believe that House File 3985 will provide a path for us to further reduce another one of the significant barriers that our students face. For far too long, we have been discussing the unaffordable costs of textbooks. With help with the legislature, there has been some progress in expanding the use of the open educational resources and reducing the costs for our students, but there is more work that can be done. By requiring Minnesota State to create a plan to increase the use of affordable textbooks, we will be able to determine how our campuses and our system can best move forward to reduce textbook barriers as a barrier to retention and completion. As the vice president of the largest student association in the state, I consistently hear stories for our students about choosing between textbooks or paying bills, paying rent, and even buying groceries. And one heartbreaking story last semester, we heard from a student who had to decide between textbooks and Christmas presents for her two sons. These are not isolated stories, but common experiences that our students share. As the use of open educational resources continues to expand, the students are presented with cheaper options for educational materials. The continued use of expensive traditional textbooks will only serve as a further barrier to students. This is a barrier that can be overcome if educators truly care about the success of their students. For example, after switching courses to OER, George Highland College saw a $3.8 million savings for students in two-year courses. Science courses using OERs also saw an increase of 13% in the course completion rate. This is only one of the many cases where affordable textbooks have helped increase student success and can benefit, and the benefits cannot be understated. We believe that when students register for their courses, they should be aware of how much course materials like textbooks will cost. House File 3985 will help to address the disclosure of course material information by requiring Minnesota State to finally study how best to provide the information on the course registration page. Students should be able to choose what courses offerings fit not only their educational needs, but also their financial ones. By providing this information earlier, students will also be able to shop around for cheaper versions of the textbook and other materials. Because cost is often one of the greatest barriers to retention and completion, we see this transparency as a key component of student success. In closing, I would like to thank Representative Daniels for authoring House File 3985. I would also like to thank Chair Nornes and the committee for taking the time to help address this critical issue. We believe that the benefits of this legislation and potential future cost savings for our students will have a significant and lasting impact on their success. Thank you.
Thank you. And Ben?
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Ben Remler, and I'm the Student Senate President at Winona State University and serve on the board of Students United. I would like to thank Chair Nornes and committee members for providing me the opportunity to testify today about an issue that impacts each of the 65,000 students attending our Minnesota State universities. The high cost of textbooks has become one of the greatest problems that confront college and university students. In fact, since 1977, textbook prices have risen by a staggering 1,041%. This dramatic increase is a burden that is shouldered by students and can often become a barrier to academic success. At Winona State University and Students United, we have identified textbook affordability as a priority issue. According to the Advisory Committee on Student Financial Assistance, 7 out of 10 students do not purchase a required textbook due to cost. This has a striking and significant impact on students' academic success. If a student is unable to afford a textbook, they're less likely to be academically successful in that course. This conclusion is supported by the findings of a Florida survey, which found that almost 38% of students earn a poor grade, and another 26% drop a course as a result of textbook costs. And while these statistics are certainly helpful in understanding the problem, even more persuasive were the stories we heard from Winona State students. Take the story of one of my classmates that had to decide between paying rent on time, paying for his car insurance, or purchasing textbooks. This student decided to hold off on buying textbooks for a couple of weeks until he was able to pay for rent and his car insurance. Unfortunately, however, within those couple weeks, the student had missed several quizzes and was significantly behind on the reading. This particular student's story was not unique. In fact, we heard from another student who told us Textbooks are the reason that I have two jobs instead of one. These stories can be found in every course, in every major, and in every discipline. Now, as students, we are pursuing higher education because we know it enriches us personally and offers opportunities that would not otherwise be possible. With that being said, we also want to strive to make higher education affordable and accessible, allowing each student an opportunity to succeed. If we were able to provide more information about the cost of a course's textbook, the student that was deciding between paying rent, paying car insurance, or textbooks would have perhaps been in a better position to balance those expenses and succeed academically. And if we were able to lower the cost of textbooks generally, the other student would not have had to take on a second job, allowing more time to focus on their education. To this end, providing a greater level of transparency and information about a course's textbook costs and lowering the overall cost of textbooks would provide much-needed relief for students. Thank you.
Thank you. Very well done. Any questions for members? Ms. Damien, I don't know, did you, I missed where you're from. Where are you going to college?
Me?
Where are you going to college? Yeah?
I'm going to Inver Hills Community College.
Okay.
Yeah, right down the road.
You may have said that, I just missed it.
Okay.
Yeah, good to know. Hearing no questions, I guess back to you, Representative Daniels.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, thanks for time to listen to our stories. This will have a huge huge impact on our students, and I just make the motion to lay over House File 3985 as amended to be held over.
All right, very good. Thank you very much. Next up, House File 3852. Representative Zerwas, your bill will be going to Ways and Means, I understand?
That's my understanding, Mr. Chair. I'll move that House File 3852 be passed and be referred to Ways and Means.
All right. Thank you, then. Very good. Do your bill.
All right. Mr. Chair, members, thank you. House File 3852 is a bill to improve the state grant formula. If we have... we end up with a target in higher education this session, my hope is that we invest a fair portion of that funding into the state grant program. The state grant program provides Minnesota college students with need-based financial aid. This part of the budget is a small share to the state's total higher spending at about just 12%. But it's the only part of the higher education budget that goes directly to the students. House File 3852 reduces the student share of the formula from its current 50% level down to 47%. The result of that change in the formula would be twofold. First, current state grant recipients would see an increase in their grant on average of $216 immediately next fall. Secondly, more than 5,100 students would be added to the program. Under this bill, in 2019, 80,000 students would see an increase in their grants, and like I mentioned, 5,100 would see an additional, 5,100 additional students would receive the grant for the first time. About 80% of new state grant recipients would be students who attend community and technical college. The state grant program targets low and middle income families and funds students directly. It fosters student choice, allowing students to find their best fit college, and has a statewide impact. It provides incentives for Minnesota kids to stay in Minnesota for college and then hopefully stay in Minnesota and part of our workforce. And this helps reduce the burden of student debt. With me today is the president of the Minnesota Private College Council, the president of Gustavus Adolphus College, and a in St. Peter and a Gustavus student.
All right. We have a plan to draw straws. Who's going to go first? Paul?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Paul Serfenik. I'm the president of the Minnesota Private College Council. Let me start by saying thank you to Representative Zerwas for authoring this bill and to all of you for the ongoing support you have given to students through the Minnesota State Grant Program. When it comes to college affordability, it can make a meaningful difference for students this year, students who have the greatest need for additional state support, by supporting the changes proposed in this bill. House File 3852 will help students at all colleges, public and private, two-year and four-year, by increasing the size of students' grants, making more Minnesota students eligible for state grants, and by basing grants on more realistic expectations about what students can pay for college. Although there has been progress made to improve the state grant program formula by addressing the family share of the formula in the last session, there's still work to be done to make the program work better and to make it work for more Minnesota students. And this bill does that by reducing the expected student share to better reflect what students really can pay. Students have only two options to pay for college, realistically. They work and they borrow. And when the student share in the grant formula is too high, students borrow more, and that means higher debt when they graduate, and they work more, which means they have less time to devote to their studies, or they choose to attend less than full time. That takes them longer to get to graduation and is ultimately more expensive. Currently, the student share in the state grant formula is set at 50% of the total cost of attendance. However, between the year 2000 and 2010, the student share was set at 46% of the cost of attendance. This bill would reduce the student share in incremental steps over several biennia in a long-term effort to move the student share to a level that is more in line with what a student can pay. And by doing so, put students in a position where their borrowing will be reasonable and the amount of hours they're working while going to college will be reasonable. These changes would target funding to students where it is most needed. It will help close affordability gaps, help students finish college on time, and reduce debt upon graduation. The impact would be significant for lower and middle income students, their families, and our economy. So if there are resources available for this committee to make higher education investments this session, we hope improving the state grant program will be one of your priorities. As Representative Zerwas said, with me today is President Becky Bergman of Gustavus Adolphus College and one of her students, Jack Schugel, and I'd like you to hear from each of them.
Welcome, President Bergman.
As Paul Serfenik noted, my name is Rebecca Bergman. I serve as president of Gustavus Adolphus College. Mr. Chair and members of the Higher Education Committee, thank you for giving me this opportunity today to speak in strong support for the investment in the state grant program. This is my fourth year as president at Gustavus. I come from the private sector. I was an executive at Medtronic in research and development, and I have hired students throughout my career at Medtronic. I understand the student perspective on their education and on the value of funding for their education. Gustavus is guided by five core values: excellence, community, justice, service, and faith. And of those, we lift up excellence and service as two key aspects of what we do. We have adopted a vision statement that claims help for our students in two main areas. One is to equip them to lead a purposeful life, a life on purpose and with purpose, and secondly, to equip them to act on the great challenges of our time, to be prepared to be leaders in their communities and in society. We're an institution that serves Minnesota students. About 70% of our student body comes from Minnesota. Our graduates and our alumni are everywhere in the state. 70% of our graduates stay here to live and work in Minnesota after graduation. We serve a very economically diverse student body. We have the highest percentage of Pell Grant recipients of any private college in Minnesota, and the number of our first-generation students on campus has doubled in the last 15 years. I want to say a big thank you to the members of this committee for supporting the state grant program. I hope that you will consider additional funding for this program as a high priority for this session. More than 700 students at Gustavus, one-third of our students, are recipients of the state grant program. That is almost 50% of our students from Minnesota. This partnership with the state allows us to continue to serve students and families from across the state. I'm joined today by a Gustavus student, Jack Schugel, who would like to share with you his personal story. Thank you.
Jack. Welcome to Committee on Higher Education.
I'm Jack Schugel. I'm currently a student at Gustavus Falls College. Hello, Mr. Chair and members of the Higher Education Committee. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak today and strong support for the state grant program. My name is Jack Schugel. I'm a junior at Gustavus Falls College studying political science, and I'm originally from Roseville, Minnesota. I want to say thank you to the members of this committee for supporting the state grant program in past years. I hope that you will consider additional funding for this program as a high priority this session. On behalf of students who get the state grant and those who are not able to qualify, I want you to know that your help is needed now more than ever. Students are struggling to afford college, and too many students and their families are not able to get the funding that they need. My family is a typical middle-class family that has worked hard to pay for my college education. I have two older siblings, a sister who attended the University of St. Thomas, and a brother who was able to attend Gustavus just like me. We're all working hard to do our part to pay for my school, and we're not taking this opportunity for granted. I'm able to attend a great school like Gustavus because the college invests in me through its own scholarship and because of the state grant program. The state grant is a large part of the reason that I chose to stay in Minnesota for college. The best thing you can do to help make college more affordable for students and families from all areas of the state is to target funding directed to students who need it the most. This bill lowers the student share part of the formula. Lowering the student share will help students avoid excessive debt because it will better recognize how much a student can actually afford to pay. It will also make families like mine across the state eligible for the program. I know that you have a lot of important budget decisions to make. Please remember that the funding the state grant program is money that will go directly to students like me. Thank you for remembering all students as you make this important budget decision, and please support investment in the state grant program. Thank you.
Thank you, Jack. Questions from members? Representative Wien.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is either for the bill's author, Representative Zerwas, or if anybody from the Office of Higher Ed is here. I see in the fiscal notes we have about $30.3 million for the rest of this biennium that grows quite a bit into, it looks like, the 2024 fiscal year to $147.2 million. I don't see any funding in the bill, so I'm just kind of wondering how this is going to work out with other existing programs, other existing dollars, just how that's going to work out.
Do we have anyone that can speak to that?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Wien, we encourage Representative Zerwas to introduce this bill with a longer-term perspective in mind. Reducing the student share by 3 percentage points won't even get it to where it was in the 2000s. Over time, to close the financial aid gaps that students face and to help the program serve all the students that need financial aid, the student share has to be lower, not just 3 percentage points lower, but additional points lower. So in order to set a goal or to have an outlook that is longer than a one-year outlook, we encouraged him to lower the share by 3 percentage points in each of the next several biennium. That's a idealistic hope for financial aid over the long run.
Representative Liam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I certainly applaud that and certainly understand that. I mean, reducing the cost of higher education, I think, needs to be one overarching goal of this committee. But again, I just don't see where the money's going to come from, even this biennium, fiscal year 19. I mean, we're at $30.3 million, and again, no funding in the bill. So, I don't know if there is an answer. Maybe the Office of Higher Ed does have an answer, if there is one. But I guess something to think about. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lane. Representative Zerwa.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And Representative Lane, the bill is going to Ways and Means after this, and if the budget targets work out and such, that this will be able to be part of the final discussion for the package on what comes together as what this bill will, what this committee will be working on. I'm hopeful that this will be a part of that final solution. And so as we move forward, we keep all options on the table. So I'm very optimistic that as there may be additional spending within higher education, that a fair share of that will be in a part of funding that actually goes to students.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a question. So if no additional funding is appropriated and this bill is passed where we reduce the contribution by students, tell me what would happen to the number of students that would qualify in the average grant per student.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schultz, we would not support a bill like this passing without funding, because it would lead to rationing, which would not really improve the position low-income students are in. This bill needs money, and we are asking this committee, if it has money, to invest some of it in the grant program. The grant program is scalable for whatever resources are available to the committee. It could be 3 points, it could be 2 points, it could be 1 point. Any movement is progress. This bill is intended to recognize that there is a large gap between what's needed for financial aid and where we're at now, even though this committee has done the best it can for the grant program.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you.
Okay.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Zerwas.
Maybe in my opening I could have laid out a little bit more what I hope to be a long-term vision and plan for the grant program, which is to return it closer to in line in what it has previously been for that student share, to try and knock it down well below the 50% currently, down as low as 38%. And so I think long term, going out multiple bienniums, this bill lays out a roadmap of how to get there. But as President Reagan has said, I am not interested in rationing or cutting people's grants. This is one option moving forward in trying to provide hopefully additional funding. I just want to make sure that this bill is on the committee's mind and part of the discussion as we come back from Easter and Passover breaks and financial targets are delivered to the committee chairs. If this committee ends up with an additional financial target for the supplementary budget year, that the grant program and that the one spot out of this committee that we give money directly to students to help them with their higher education costs, that this program is part of that discussion and part of the mix.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I really do think we need to do something to make higher education more affordable, especially for very low-income families in the state. So I appreciate you bringing this forward, Representative Zerwas. One idea is to roll back some of the tax cuts to the wealthy and to corporations that were made last year. So I would encourage you to talk to our tax chair. And if you're serious about trying to identify funding to subsidize higher ed, that would be one possibility.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm not here to debate Chair David's tax policy or the historic tax reforms accomplished in Washington, D.C., and the amazing impact they've had on the state's economy, that even the governors, the MMB staff, have credited those tax cuts for the turnaround in the budget forecast. I'm not here to have that debate, but if you want to help out, I thank you for the opportunity.
I'll have that debate. You want to do it now?
Others? Questions? Any other testifiers? Go ahead. Move up to the microphone.
I'm Mark Hughes, and I'll be brief. I've been a 12-year member on the Minnesota State Council on Disabilities, but that's not why we're here today. I'm also a U of M grad out of Carleton School or Business Day School way back then. And back when I was there, and I sound old, and I'm really not, but I bought used books, and that wasn't always such a good idea. But I want you to know that the next generation of my family is over at the U in the veterinarian school. And she was one of three to be accepted this last year, and so there was no question she could have done it. She wanted my help, and I said, nope, you're on your own. You're going to do it yourself. But we're now buying books and the things that she needs, and I'm instead of working 10 and a half hours a day, I'm working 12 trying to help her out. But I just want to make a quick comment, and that is this. There's no question that money is tight this session. But these are college students, and some of us had the good fortune to go to college at one time. Some of us did not. We got there other ways. But these students that are here today are tomorrow's future. And by saying we should or shouldn't provide this funding, we may be only hurting ourselves in the state of Minnesota, because this is tomorrow's future to carry on for those of us that are going to go on to hopefully a great retirement someday. And I don't want to sound old, but in reality, we all hope to get there. And so whatever it takes to support this, and I'm not saying don't buy used books, but I'm saying just give these students what they need at a economical cost, but don't hurt their education. And that's all I've got to say. And I want to remind the committee that May 1st, Dr. Kaler is speaking at their first Tuesday, and I'm excited to announce that. Thank you.
He may have a chance to remind us again before the day's over.
Oh, I hope so. Thank
you for your testimony. Time. Representative Zuwas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And with that, I'll renew my motion for 3852 to be re-referred to Ways and Means.
Okay, all those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? House File 3852 is on its way to Ways and Means.
Thank
Good afternoon.
You,
welcome. As Chair, I will bring up House File 3899 and move it before the committee, and this will be referred to the House, the Ways and Means Committee as well. Representative Barr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And we also have an amendment, A1 amendment. Do you want to move that first?
Yeah, I'll move the A1 amendment. Do you need to describe what that is?
Sure. Quickly? So the A1 amendment adds the word undergrad to line 1.21, and that's to ensure that the legislation only applies to undergraduate resident students.
Okay. Any questions? All those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment is adopted. Okay. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 3899 would appropriate $10 million recurring to the University of Minnesota. The university has committed to using this appropriation to hold tuition flat for the upcoming academic year for all Minnesota undergraduate students at all campuses in the system. This will offset increases by $200 to $250 for approximately 31,500 students. And I just want to comment on that dollar amount. When I was going to school, I worked three jobs, and the end of my first year, I was short $100 after scraping all of my money together. And it was the difference between being able to register for my next year's classes or not being able to register. So when a lot of times in these committees we talk about very large numbers, and I want to point out that these numbers can have a significant meaning for students. This bill would also restore $10 million cut from the university's appropriation in fiscal year 2019 from last session's higher education budget bill. And, Mr. Chairman, I think we're all aware that the cost of college can be a significant factor when pursuing higher education. All of us have heard, I'm sure, from constituents who are concerned about this. One of my constituents, Courtney, spoke with me at my recent town hall, and she told me how challenging tuition costs could be and was really excited when she heard that I was going to be authoring this bill. This legislation would address those challenges by helping to keep down the tuition at the university next year. Our goal with this bill is to make our university a more affordable and accessible place for Minnesota students across the state. It's also about continuing our partnership with the university to train and educate tomorrow's skilled workforce. So I did appreciate the comments from the testifier on the last bill talking about that as well. With me today is University President Eric Haller and two university students who will speak in support of this legislation. And I just want to say thank you for the opportunity to speak on behalf of this bill today.
Welcome, President Haller.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Eric Haller. It's my honor to serve as president of the University of Minnesota, and I am here to strongly support House Bill 3899. As Representative Paul indicated, this bill addresses our supplemental budget request for a recurring $10 million investment from the state to our base funding. Your investment would help hold the line on tuition for Minnesota resident undergraduate students on all five of our campuses in the next academic year. I'm thankful to Representative Paul for sponsoring this bill and thankful to all of you and your colleagues here in the legislature for your previous investments in the University of Minnesota. We've worked together to create a great world-class research university for Minnesota. And I'm also very thankful to Governor Dayton for supporting the supplemental request and promoting its value in his State of the State address earlier this month, although his request was for one-time funding. As you know, affordability has been one of my top priorities as president of the university, and the Board of Regents and I have worked hard to keep tuition costs down. Frankly, Mr. Chair, this is really pretty simple. There are two levers to the cost of tuition. One is our ability to control spending, and the other is the investment made by you, by the state. Our partnership between the university and you is inextricably linked, and we've done our part in this important and historic partnership, and it's one that I'm proud of. We're on track to reduce our administrative costs by $90 million and reallocating those funds to our core mission of teaching, research, and outreach. I think I said $90 million. In the six budgets since I've been president, our in-state tuition for Twin City students has seen an average annual increase of 1%, or below the rate of inflation, and I believe you have a flyer at your space showing that. That increase has been lower still, 0.4%, less than 0.5% for students on our other four campuses in Crookston, Duluth, Morris, and Rochester. This is the lowest annual percentage tuition increase over such a long period of time at the university since the 1950s. Eisenhower was president. It's part of the reason the percentage of undergraduate students graduating with zero debt from the U has climbed to 43% on the Twin Cities campus, and the median debt for our students across all campuses has fallen by $1,041 over the past 4 years. These recurring supplemental funds we're requesting would allow us to freeze tuition for the third time in 7 years for Twin Cities undergraduate students and the fourth time in 7 years for Crookston, Duluth, Morris, and Rochester students. It's important that the $10 million be a recurring increase to our appropriation. As we're faced with recurring or ongoing cost increases, such as salaries and fringe benefits, compliance requirement, and utilities, it would not be responsible on our part to apply a revenue source to those costs that will disappear after 1 year. University expenditure reductions will continue, but they cannot cover the full impact of cost increases in the future if we intend to maintain or hopefully improve on the level of excellence the state has come to expect from its land-grant university and that the state deserves from its land-grant university. And indeed, this investment by you now would offset the $10 million decrease in state appropriations for FY 2019 under current law. Again, we're doing our part, and we are respectfully requesting your continued support for our important partnership. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, for this opportunity to testify, and I urge you to support House File 3899. Mr. Chair, with your permission, I would now like to turn the microphone over to two of our students, Tala Alafukaha and Carl Thone, two students who will speak more to our supplemental budget request.
All right. And can you stay clear?
I will.
Post by in case there's a question.
I will do that.
Never know.
Certainly.
There could be. Good afternoon. Welcome to the House Higher Education Committee. And are you first?
Yep.
Could you repeat your name for?
Yeah.
I can't pronounce it. So.
Tara Alfokaha.
Very nice.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, good afternoon, and thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak. My name is Tala Alfokaha. I'm currently a freshman from Eden Prairie at the University of Minnesota, and I'm here to testify in support of House File 3899 to hold tuition flat at the University of Minnesota. As a student who went through the American education system, certain ideas about success in higher education were instilled in me from a young age. Teachers, parents, and other social influences always reinforced the idea that if I studied for tests and took good notes and joined clubs and worked hard, the entire world of higher education would be within reach. And growing up, I believed this wholeheartedly. I believed that I, not my parents' bank account, was the only obstacle to obtaining my goals after high school. It was only once I had reached the precipice of my secondary education that another variable, one that was never really mentioned as a key to success, suddenly eclipsed every other factor: money. When it came down to choosing between Madison, Michigan, and Minnesota, I found that the University of Minnesota was the most affordable of the three, and my decision became simple, spelled out in the numbers trailing behind a dollar sign. Let me be clear. I am so grateful that I went to the University of Minnesota. In the beginning of the year, the only thing I was certain about was being uncertain. But now, after deciding that I would major in math and political science, joining the publication and the Minnesota Student Association, and taking advantage of the wide range of resources that the U has to offer, I'm confident that I ended up in the right place. But I also know that if the U had not been affordable, my initial decision to attend would not have been so clear-cut. And after talking to my classmates and colleagues and learning about their motivations for attending, I know that my experience is not unique. It is, in fact, the norm. Most of my fellow students consider the cost of college when deciding where to attend. And for many of us, money is not just a factor, but the main factor. And while we know that the wisdom and knowledge that we gain in college can't be reduced to a price tag, it is precisely this price tag that may prevent potential contributors to the vibrant and diverse community on campus from attending the university. As students and individuals, we are driven to discover, but we need you, our elected officials, to help us build a road without barriers so future generations can reach their destinations as well. Thank you again for this opportunity to testify in support of this legislation and for supporting us in an affordable, accessible college education.
Thank you. Can I ask, when do you expect to graduate?
2021. Yes.
All right. Very good.
Thank you.
And we have Carl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Carl Thone, and I'm a junior studying industrial engineering at the University of Minnesota, Twin Cities. I am here today to support House File 3899, holding tuition flat for Minnesota undergraduate students at the University of Minnesota. Starting with both sets of my grandparents, both of my parents, and even my older sister, I'm officially the third generation given the opportunity to attend the University of Minnesota. The start of my story really begins with my father, who after graduating from the University of Minnesota, joined the U.S. Navy, where he served for 22 years defending our country. Growing up, we were always moving, always uprooting our home to relocate to someplace new. It would be called home for a while until our next move. This meant new friends, new schools, new everything. Because of this, I saw the world, which I might add is a spectacular place filled with awe-inspiring people. But I lost that identity of knowing home. Growing up, my extended family was always around the Twin Cities, so for holidays, we always came back. The Twin Cities seemed to be home base. When deciding schools, I was still in Omaha, Nebraska. During that same time, my parents were uprooting and moving to Stuttgart, Germany. Once again, I was losing home. I can vividly remember my mom telling me to apply to the University of Minnesota. She said, "You have family in the Twin Cities that can take care of you when we can't." After accepting my offer to the University of Minnesota and now living here for 3 years, I am home. For a young military brat, I finally say, I found home. I now live in a home with 9 amazing people that I call my second family. I have gotten the opportunity to build a new relationship with my 93-year-old grandmother that I never had growing up. I now walk to classes and recognize people I know and care about, even at a school of 50,000 undergrads. And thus, I truly believe my story is one of finding home. So I ask you to support this legislation that would keep tuition flat for in-state students, because this is their home. Coming from a student who just found his home, don't deny students that identity. Ensure that home will be affordable and accessible to all in-state students, just like me. So, thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Questions from members of President Kaler or the students or Representative Barr? Representative Whaler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think I just have a comment, and if one of the testifiers or if Representative Barr wants to comment, feel free. I really appreciate you, Bill, Representative Barr. I want to respect what you're doing. I have concerns with the bill, and I know I've brought this up in the past, but just, you know, a couple of years ago, in 2014, the university, for example, was redirecting administrative savings into other top priority areas, but those top priority areas did not include reducing tuition. So it just concerns me that it seems that while we all want to reduce tuition, where it's at on the priority level, there seems to be some discrepancy. So I have concerns, but wanted to say I appreciate and respect the bill, and of course we all want to reduce tuition. Just not sure this is the best way to do it.
Was a comment, reply?
Mr. Chair, thank you. You know, I don't know what happened several years ago and what the priorities were, but I do think we should make our students a priority. And what we do know now is that, you know, they're struggling under significant tuition, and anything I think we can do to help prepare those students, our workforce of the future, you know, I want to give them the benefit of the doubt, not hold them hostage to what may or may not have occurred from an administrative standpoint. And I will let President Kaler comment to that if he so chooses. So,
President Kaler?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Whalen, we work very hard to reduce the need for additional revenue. That additional revenue comes either from the state or from tuition. But we do that without sacrificing the quality of what we do and the geographical access that we provide. And at the end of the day, the regents hire me and my administration to make those balances and those decisions. We do feel that the quality of what is obtained by a student at the University of Minnesota is very much worth the tuition that we ask them to pay.
Representative Whaler?
Yeah, just a quick follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Barr and President Kaler, for your responses. I agree, we want to give high-quality education, as I think most people know. I'm a University of Minnesota graduate, love the university. And Representative Barr, I 100% agree, students should be our priority. In the future, just hoping that we all can come together on how we're looking at the university's budget and finding areas the university can reduce costs more. And I've been digging into this. I actually have another bill that is looking at this, but not quite sure it'll be ready for prime time this session. So I'd love to have more conversations as we go forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I look through this bill, I know that at the title says that it's undergraduate tuition relief. And I look through the bill, and I'm trying to find where addresses that and says that. Can you please explain to me why that's not spelled out that I can find in the bill?
Representative Barr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. We did an amendment that specifically addresses that. It's on line 1.21. We inserted undergraduate resident tuition.
That is correct. I think that was done when you were not in the room.
Okay. Yeah,
President Bernardi.
Yes, so I'm going to look at that a little bit closer, and I still don't understand how that talks about tuition relief. Can you, because the Board of Regents is requested to set, okay, tuition, undergraduate tuition rates for academic year not to exceed the rates of the academic year for 2017. Okay, so that's where it holds it steady. Okay, thank you.
Bernardi, is that?
Yes, that helps. It helps. Thank you.
Okay, other questions? Representative Haley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Barr, for bringing this forward. I just wanted to comment. I think it's quite impressive that tuition at our University of Minnesota system has been held flat for all these years. That's a testament to the university and not just the Twin Cities campus, but all the campuses. And we'll have difficult decisions to make when we get targets, but I hope this one can be considered. Thank you.
Anyone else? Representative Barr? Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to point out that we're using money from the Healthcare Access Fund to help finance, I'm assuming, physician training and other medical training that occurs at the University of Minnesota. So I hope those who advocate for this additional fund and people who believe that we need to invest in our medical research and training of physicians will support sustaining the Healthcare Access Fund.
Representative Taylor, do you have any additional comments? What did I say?
Mr. Chair, you said representative, and I am honored for the battlefield promotion, as it were, but I'll keep my president's job as long as I can. But thank you to the committee for your attention, for your careful consideration. Representative Haley, thank you for noticing that the tuition skyrocketing story that has a national narrative is simply not true at the University of Minnesota. We have bent that cost curve, and it reflects a lot of hard work by a lot of dedicated people at the university. So thank you for noticing that. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for having us. Representative Barr, thank you.
Representative Barr, any final comments?
I'll just conclude, Mr. Chair, with I appreciate your support on this bill.
Okay. If there is no other discussion, I then renew my motion that House File 3899, as amended, be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay.
Aye.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. It's on its way. I'm going to turn the gavel temporarily over to my vice chair.
Mr. Chair, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Chair, House File 3638, is that correct?
Yes.
And we move to Ways and Means?
Chair Nornis moves that House File 3638 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, very good. Go ahead. I need some company. House File 3638, members, appropriates $10 million in the FY19 from the general fund to Minn State for allocation to the system campuses according to the system's allocation framework. It also has an additional $21 million from the general fund to M State for upgrading their student record system. replacing the current system. Two things, $10 million and then $21 million. And to explain that further and tell you more details, we have three individuals, and including the Chancellor. Are you going to be the beginning part of that?
Yes.
Okay, Chancellor, welcome.
Thank you, Jim. No,
Mr. Malhotra, please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you. Chair Christensen, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Devendra Malhotra, and I have the privilege and honor to serve as Chancellor of Minnesota State. Representative Nornes, members of the committee, let me begin by thanking you for authoring the House File 3638, which is Minnesota State's supplemental budget request. I'm joined today by Vice Chancellor Laura King and President Scott Olson of Winona State University. Also with me in the audience is Angela Millander, President of Century College. We have shared with you our materials, and our remarks today will be brief. Our supplemental budget request contains two requests that were in front of the committee last session. $21 million in ongoing support for ISRS Next Gen, which will replace ISRS, our out-of-date technology infrastructure, and $10 million in ongoing support for our 54 campuses across the state. I would like to share a few thoughts on both of our requests before handing it over to President Olson and Vice Chancellor King. The NextGen project is a strategic investment in our information technology that replaces our system's outdated 20-year-old record system. It's a priority project of the Board of Trustees, and the Board will play a critical role in its oversight. Our project objective is clear and unambiguous: provide an enhanced student experience and future-proof our technology investment. Put simply, running the core of our enterprise is a 20-year-old system which is at risk because it is nearing its end of life and which is not meeting our students' needs. Replacing this system is a matter of competitiveness, sustainability, usability, efficiency and effectiveness, and cybersecurity. The replacement of ISRS impacts all aspects of Minnesota State operations, including student registration, course scheduling, student transcripts, financial aid, student housing, student records, budgeting, accounting, human resources, and payroll. The successful implementation of NextGen cannot be overstated. Our ability to deliver on our mission depends upon it. Our ability to continue to serve 375,000 students and our 15,000 faculty and staff depends upon it. In short, our project is not a nice to have, it is an imperative for Minnesota State. Our second request for campus support directly impacts the ability of our colleges and universities to financially support critical programs and protect student services. The financial pressures our campuses are facing are real. I have encouraged campus leaders to be very open with their legislative delegations about their respective budget challenges and the significant impacts that will be felt across our colleges and universities without supplemental funding. Every campus budget scenario is different. Campuses that have dealt with declining enrollments, regardless of the reason of decline, are making budgetary reductions that, frankly, sometimes add to the problems of recruiting students, creating a vicious cycle. As members of the committee are well aware, tuition has been frozen for the next fiscal year. We are very appreciative that Governor Dayton has recognized these pressures in his supplemental budget. And I would implore you as a committee to work with your leadership to provide funds for the campuses in your communities. President Olson is here today to provide a campus perspective on the NextGen project, but he can also speak to a campus perspective on the need for supplemental funding. He is in the trenches, a place I know well, having served in the campus trenches, including a decade as provost and president at Minnesota State campuses. I know what President Olson and his colleagues are going through. Simply put, we need your help. I would now like to turn our presentation over to President Olson. President Olson.
Thank you, Chancellor Malhotra. President Olson.
So my name is Scott Olson. I'm the president of Winona State University. Thanks, Chair Pro Tem Christensen and Chair Nornes and committee members for the opportunity to speak today. I point out that that student who spoke on textbook affordability, Ben Remler, is that kind of student we have at Winona State University. He's the president of our student senate, and I know you've seen him around before, and he's just great. I think you also know that one of the very distinguished members of your committee is a favorite son in Winona and a graduate of Winona State University. So I'll leave the mystery here. I will say he gave me this gift recently, which is a replica of the sort of things he carries around when he's taking notes on the Capitol. So, thank you for this opportunity to talk about this, and thank you for everything you do for Minnesota. Thank you for everything you've done for Minnesota State. I've lived in other states, I've worked in other systems, and I can tell you that Minnesota is still a great state for higher education, and all three of the presentations you saw today were illustrations of that. And thank you for your support of that. As far as the supplemental budget goes, this would have a huge effect if it were passed on Winona State University. We're about $600,000 down based on what the appropriation last year would have given if fully funded, and that translates into about 44 positions that we've had to eliminate through about a $6 million total strain on our budget this year. So when all the things are added together, it's a pretty tough year we're coming into, and I think that's typical of the schools throughout the system. You're going to see lots of positions going away, and that means programs get tighter, and that means class sizes get bigger, and that means strain and stress on students. As far as this NextGen project goes, I guess the main thing I would stress is I'm quite worried about what it means for students if we don't do this. This is the system that keeps track of their course registrations, their financial aid. It's what generates their transcripts when they graduate. And the current system we have, as the Chancellor said, is written in a language called COBOL, which was created sometime between the creation of Uniform, or Cuneiform, and Cyrillic script, I think. It's an ancient programming language, and there are no programmers being prepared today to program in that language. So when the last, I don't know, four or five that we have retire, there won't be anybody left who can improve and repair ISRS, which is our current system. This is something other campuses have done, other systems have done, and so it's really important to us. And I know it has wide support among the campus presidents. I know the students support it. That's what Ben has told me. And I don't know so much about Leave Minnesota, but I know Students United is supportive of making this change too. The scale of it's unprecedented. At Winona State, we're known throughout the system, throughout the state, as being a leader in technology. We were an initiator 20 years ago with a laptop program that was one of the first of its kind in the nation. Now we call it the eWarrior program. But this scale of change is a huge scale of change. It's quite expensive, and frankly, we just need your help. And your help is what's going to allow us to continue to serve students as well as we currently do. So thank you for listening to that pitch, and with that, I will turn it over to someone you know, and that is our Chief Financial Officer for the system, Laura King. Thank you.
Thank you, President Olson. Ms. King.
Pardon me, we're doing a little chair juggling here. Good afternoon, members. My name is Laura King. I'm the Vice Chancellor for Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. Thank you, President Olson, for being here with us. And for your passion and commitment to the work of the university. As the Chancellor mentioned, we have both this campus support request and the NextGen request. I want to say a bit more about the campus support request. We certainly know that it's fundamental to our ability to serve our students across the state, and one of the important features about it is its structure. The way the appropriation was provided in the last biennial budget process, the board's campus support request to fund college and university inflationary costs totaled $143 million for this current biennium, set $47 million in fiscal 17, fiscal 18, and $95 million in fiscal 19. This one-third, two-third structure mirrors the way our costs behave when we have the compounding effect of inflation. Costs occur one-third in the first year of the biennium and two-thirds in the second year of the biennium. The 2017 legislature didn't follow that pattern and instead appropriated additional support for us in this biennium with 55% of the resources in the first year and 45% in fiscal 19. This funding structure doesn't match the way our costs behave, and it's created for us a $34 million structural deficit in fiscal 19. And you can see this in the materials at your place. This funding cliff requires the system and our colleges and universities to make really thoughtful, difficult budget reduction decisions between fiscal 18 and 19. You can see that in the materials, the extreme structural impact that we have as that consequence multiplies out from one year to the next. It has the effect, essentially, of providing us with slightly more money in the first year of the biennium than our cost structure requires, and slightly less money in the second year of the biennium. Your support of our campus support request will help that problem. It won't eliminate it in fiscal 19, but it will help our problem. And in base continuing resources, it stops the multiplying effect of the structural problem from fiscal 19 out to fiscal 20. So we look forward with great hope to your ability to support this request. Let me, if I might, Chair Christensen, hand the microphone back to the bill's author and the Chancellor.
Thank you, Ms. King, Chancellor Mahalter.
Chair Christensen, members of the committee, that concludes our presentation, but we'll be willing to take any questions from you.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm looking at the $10 million for campus support. And I'm kind of a Joe Friday kind of guy, so I'm looking at the facts, I'm looking at the bullet points, and out of those 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, maybe 7 bullet points, a lot of adjectives, but I don't see a lot of meaningful tell me what you're going to do with $10 million, except you're telling me that we're going to honor unique contributions, or we're going to meet student and community needs, or we're going to protect student choice and program specialization. Sounds great, but I'd like a little meat on that bone.
Mr. Chair, Representative Albright, if I...
I'm Ms. King.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am looking at the inside page of the four-page foldout, I think, Representative Albright, that you referred to. And what this shows the committee is the distribution of the $10 million to each of our campuses. Each of our campuses, as President Olson made reference to, runs a budget process that's tied to their local priorities. And so what you see on the left is an illustration of what those local priorities are. Our board, the chancellor, we don't tell presidents how to budget. We don't tell them what their priorities are. Some presidents are particularly focused on curriculum development this year, tied to new programs that their community is looking for. Other presidents are particularly focused on new student success initiatives because they've identified things that would be helpful to their students. What these bullets show you is that we are a diverse, distributed system with presidents who are managing their local strategies and would use these resources to help them do that.
Mr. Chair.
I represent Albright.
So to the testifiers, so when are the budgets actually set?
Ms. King.
Mr. Chair, Representative Albright, the campuses are in the heat of it right now for fiscal 19, and I'm sure President Olson can speak to it directly. Once that work is concluded, it comes to our board, it comes to the staff in late April, and we prepare materials for the board to look at in May. So presidents are right now working with their local student association, their local faculty association, their local communities, and we will see the fiscal 19 budgets in front of the board for the board's consideration in May and June. They take two readings to consider campus budgets so that they can hear from campus folks before the boards are adopted, the budgets are adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let's move on. I just have a couple comments or questions about your ISRS moving to NextGen. You can appreciate my jaded skepticism with regard to any computer system upgrades with the likes of MinSure, MinLars, and now we've got NextGen. You're asking for $21 million for a system that I know not of, but yet on the backside you say it's going to take 7 to 10 years in order for you to replace it to the president from Winona on a change of this proportion on a huge scale. I've heard those words used in a combination before too, and that's why we don't get license plates on time now too. So the question I ask is, you're asking for $20 million. Is that the total that you'll be using over 7 to 10 years, or is this that's just the first ask? And if so, what percentage of the total is the ask for the system?
Ms. King? Chair Christensen, members of the committee, as relating to the funding, this doesn't fund the whole project. I'll let Vice Chancellor King give you all the necessary details about the total funding and where this request falls in that total funding.
Vice Chancellor King.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Albright, the request before the committee is a companion to the request that we brought before the committee last year, and the committee was able to provide us with $4 million in base funding in fiscal 18 and fiscal 19. What we have before you today is a request for an additional $21 million in base funding in fiscal 19, and if you're able to support that, you would not hear from us again on this project, according to our current forecast. We expect it to take 7 years because we are going to be implementing in waves. The first wave in will be the finance and HR system, and that will be installed and operating by the middle of fiscal 2022, and then we will wave in the student record system. We're doing it over several years because, as President Olson mentioned, this is an extremely large data system. We're doing it differently than the way it was done 20 years ago. We're not pursuing a course that has us writing code. We're pursuing a course that has us licensing someone software from a commercial higher ed software provider. And the work that we will do at the front end will require all of us to change the way we do things so that when we move into a new product, we're doing business the way the product was designed to operate, instead of writing code to replace the way we do business today. So we're taking it slowly so that we are assured that we can continue student services, continue financial aid processing, et cetera. If you're able to support us this year, that's the extent of our request to you for support of the project.
President Olson.
Thank you, Chair Christensen, Chair Norris, and Representative Albright. I want to just underline something that Laura was saying, and that is these are mature third-party products, and I think if you had had the chance to ask President Kaler or the President of Gustavus, they would tell you they're already using one of these third-party commercial products. It's not something that we're going to home grow. That's what ISRS was. These go by the name of PeopleSoft and Banner, and they're
Workday,
and they're mature products out in the marketplace, and we would just be licensing those for our use. The reason for the long timeline of implementation is there's a lot of things we've got to learn to do differently in this new software environment, and that will take some time to figure out.
Chancellor Mahatra.
Chair Christensen, Representative Albright, I think to underscore both what Vice Chancellor King and President Olson said is that we are currently in the first phase. where we will be doing our business process reviews. And so it also enables us to help understand how we currently do business and how, with the help of the technology which is available, we can be better. So it'll be opening up opportunities for us to do things in ways which we currently cannot do.
Mr. Albright.
Mr. Chair, we could spend a lot of time talking about this, but I'll just leave it at that and look forward to the debate on this one.
Representative Pulaski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. President Olson, can you explain to the committee how Winona State presented the February 5th $6.2 million reduction to both the university community and then to the region, how that was done?
President Olson.
Chair Christensen, Representative Pulaski, we had open forums back in November where we formatted kind of a best case budget scenario, a likely case, and a worst case budget scenario, shared that widely on campus and in the community, and had the various divisions of the university prepare budgets in alignment with those three different budget scenarios, and then did it again in, I think it must have been February, and then finally issued a bunch of decisions about what we were going to do. We were originally thinking we would maybe have to do layoffs. It turned out there were open positions that we were able to use as part of meeting that. But it goes really to Representative Albright's earlier question, which is we have to sort of do scenario-based budget planning at this point, not knowing some of the factors that are still determining what our budget will be.
Mr. Chair, President Olson, was the legislative delegation brought in early and often in these deliberations so the legislative delegation fully understood the impact of the votes they took in 2017 on this budget?
Chair Christensen, Representative Pulaski, Chernoros, we had meetings with the local legislative delegation, the representative and the senator, I think in November and again in February, where these various budget forecasts were shared and solicited their wisdom about how to work this problem and how to solve it and so on. And so I hope they would say they felt informed and involved in what we were trying to do.
Representative Pulaski.
Mr. Chair, President Olson, you prepared a presentation that you showed both the university community and the legislative delegation repeatedly, and then you made additions and subtractions too. Can you explain what that presentation consisted of?
President Olson.
Chair Christensen, Representative Pulaski, it had a number of different aspects to it. It was a series of PowerPoint slides that our CFO and I helped kind of develop. It went through budget forecasting, both where enrollments have been, where enrollments are projected to go, what our predictive systems had been predicting, what they hadn't predicted, and then various aspects of our budget and what we thought the appropriation from the legislature meant, what the cost of ISRS would be if it weren't funded through this request, what the cost of labor costs, which I think you just kind of worked on yesterday. So we had to kind of forecast all those things in. But of course, back in November, we didn't know what was going to happen with the labor agreements. We didn't know, we still don't know what might happen with these two requests you're hearing today.
Representative Pulaski.
Mr. Chair, Chancellor, the week of February 5th, that Wednesday, you were in Winona. You and I met for about an hour and a half. I had the presentation that President Olson now described. What was your reaction to the presentation, and then what did you do the day after we had that meeting?
Chair Christensen.
Chancellor Malhotra.
Chair Christensen, Representative Pulaski, we had a great conversation, and I followed it up with the conversation with President Olson, and then we also shared it with our other presidential colleagues too, in terms of the process which Winona State University followed.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Pulaski,
I'm going through this simply as a reminder that I would hope every campus of the MnState system would do this, so that we would have total comprehension of what these budgets are and how the budgets play out at the campus level. You made tough decisions, and certainly people were not happy, but at least they understood what the decisions were. And as a member of the legislature, I would prefer to take an informed vote rather than an ignorant one. And Winona State made sure that the vote was informed.
Chair Mahatra.
Chair Christensen, Representative Pawlowski, you know, thank you for recognizing the good work which is going on and hard work which is going on and the tough decisions which are being made at Winona State University. I must say that our other campuses also in different variants of the same process is being followed. The idea is to engage both the internal and external stakeholders and identify all the tough choices which are being made. So it is very important to understand as to what our options are and where we can possibly go with the kinds of resources and the external circumstances which our institutions are facing. Thank you.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Will there be any long-term cost savings if this is implemented in terms of labor cost savings?
Mr. Chair,
Vice Chancellor King.
Representative Schultz, do you have reference to the NextGen project?
Yes.
Vice Chancellor King.
Representative Schultz, we're really excited about NextGen on a couple of levels. The Chancellor referred to one. It is an opportunity for us to identify practices, and to the extent we streamline the practices, we expect there'll be some opportunity at the campus level for changing work assignments, changing the way the work is done. We're also really excited because the modern higher education software packages have tremendous data analytics and student success, student progress, student communication tools that would enable us to do much more robust student communication and student success work. We expect that will influence how campuses organize their student services to the benefit of students. Whether it translates into cost reductions from a labor standpoint, that's not really why we're getting into this. And I would offer that if you look at our administrative costs and compare us anywhere in the country, we're already tremendously lean. And so this is a technology advantage, I think, to improve services and improve student tools first and foremost.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just think that we need to recognize that this is a large system in higher education, serving a lot of students and hiring a lot of individuals in Minnesota, and that it's expensive to update IT. And where higher ed is required to report for accreditation and to meet hundreds of different federal and state guidelines. And so I think that it's important that these systems get upgraded from legacy systems to make that reporting easier. And the other thing I'm realizing is that we need to train more students in information technology and other computer science fields so it's not so expensive to lease these types of IT programs, not just higher ed, but across all of the in the private sector and in the market. So I appreciate the request, and I understand the need for it.
Any further discussion? Representative Jessup.
Thank you, Chair. On your front of your page here, you've got the projection you have is 375,000 students served annually. We had a presentation earlier that talked about the anticipated enrollment in higher education for the next couple of years, perhaps declining a little bit and then becoming more stable. In your own planning, what do you anticipate in terms of student enrollment over, let's say, the next 5-10 years?
Vice Chancellor King.
Certainly, Mr. Chair, and Representative Jessup. We will see new forecasts from our colleges and universities this spring for 19, 20, and 21 is the sort of the range of outlook that campuses prepare. And I would expect them to be overall down a couple of points, 19 compared to 18. And then from what I'm hearing from folks, they think that that'll flatten out. And then there's another high school growth curve coming in 22, 23, 24, and so we'll see some pickup from that. We have a tremendous enrollment relationship with the working adult, and as the unemployment rate stays low and full employment continues, that's pressure against our enrollment outlook. So our strategies from an academic standpoint are really targeted at improving our outreach to the working adult community and enabling them to go to school while they continue to work. And that's really an opportunity we think we have that distinguishes us from a more traditional 18 to 24-year-old provider. We do have in our universities a continuing strong enrollment relationship right out of high school, but our two-year schools are really substantially older than traditional college age, and as we move into the workforce programming, we expect to see enrollment gains there.
Thank you.
Representative Daniels.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This could be for any of the testifiers today. The chart you have dividing all the dollar amounts per college on the sheet there, was that in request by the colleges, or is that estimated? Is there a formula those used to come up with those dollar figures?
Mr. Chair and Representative Daniels, as the bill's author mentioned in his introduction, we have an allocation method that's based on a variety of data elements. It's tied to enrollment. It's tied to class instruction cost. It's called our allocation framework. And the numbers you have in the materials represent the number that drives through that framework to each of the colleges and universities.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Daniels.
A quick follow-up. Then, if these are done by the formula, I know that my local college is South Central. One of the rare colleges in the state that's actually have improving enrollment. And the formula based on that, at $10 million, are they being rewarded for this, or are they being penalized? But I see their amount is somewhat low compared to the other formula part. So are they being rewarded for growing, or are they being penalized? That's just kind of a hypothetical.
Representative Christensen, Representative Daniels, they are absolutely being rewarded for enrollment. What I don't have in front of me and can't tell you is where their enrollment growth rate is in time based on fiscal 19. We have generally a two-year lag in the formula, so enrollment growth 2 years ago is paid for in next year's formula. But let me look at that particularly, and I'll get you a specific question back. On its fundamentals, the framework rewards enrollment, and so be assured of that.
Any further discussion? Any further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The motion prevails, and it's on its way to Ways and Means.
The motion is going to Ways and Means, correct? Just for the record.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Welcome, Representative Dean.
Thank you, Representative Nornes, or Chairman Nornes. Thank you for hearing House File 2574 that we would like to have moved to the Health and Human Services Finance.
I will move House File 2574 then, and its destination will be Health and Human Services Finance. Okay, begin.
Thank you, Chairman Nornes, and Representatives, thank you for allowing time for this important bill today. I know that your schedule is very, very busy, so I will be very brief in describing House File 2574, Rare Disease Advisory Council. It's a very exciting bill that we can offer for both the University of Minnesota and for people with rare diseases both here in Minnesota and around the country and around the world. As you know, Minnesota leads the country and leads the world in rare disease, finding the causes and cures for rare disease and also therapies.
Representative, do you have an amendment? Do you want to deal with that right off the bat?
Yep, I'll just briefly describe the bill and then just kind of say what the amendment does.
Okay.
But that's what the bill does. It talks about developing a rare disease advisory council for Minnesota so that people can advocate. And if you're a parent, family member of a family member with a rare disease, that you can get information and also information about therapies and clinical trials and also information about your disease. We are fortunate to have some of the world leaders here at the University of Minnesota, and that's where this bill will nest. And in working with the University of Minnesota, we have the A3 amendment that kind of really refines, and working with the stakeholders in the university, we've really refined how this is actually going to work, creates how this is going to practice, the problems that we might foresee, where this is going to be housed at the U, and how this moves forward. So that's really what the A3 does. I'd appreciate moving that on.
I'll move the A3 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. I didn't vote.
The motion passed anyway.
The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Chairman Norris, members. As I said, you know, we have really been blessed in Minnesota with the University of Minnesota, Mayo, and lots of other researchers, private and public, that really tell the story of what Minnesota can do, has done, and will do in the future. And I have Abby Hauser, a student, who would like to just speak very, very briefly about this and just talk about a personal experience. So, Abby.
Okay, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Abby Hauser, and I'm a recent graduate of the University of Minnesota, currently saving money for graduate school, and I'm also an athlete. But I also happen to have a rare disease. I have classical Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, which is a genetic connective tissue disorder. That affects the structure of collagen. And collagen is basically like the building blocks of your body. So it's responsible for keeping your body together. It's like a glue. And it's found in almost every system in your body. So in any type of EDS, there's systemic problems ranging from joint instability and pain all the way through blood vessel and heart issues because collagen is found there. Research has improved greatly in Minnesota on EDS just in my lifetime alone, but we still don't have any treatments specifically for the underlying cause of it. Instead, we're always stuck just treating as symptoms arise, which is pretty much like playing catch-up in a game that you can't win. So most of the symptoms of my disease have their own, kind of names. So the symptoms within the chart get listed separately from your rare disease currently. So on paper or to any health insurance or researchers looking, you see my rare disease followed by a bunch of other conditions like joint pain, stress fractures, heart issues. But it doesn't list that they're all connected right now, which limits how researchers can help connect those dots and further the genetic testing and gene editing for disorders with genetic bases like mine. And it can also be hard for a doctor when he sees all these symptoms to want to go help rare disease patients. So with this advisory council, it's going to help recommend policies and effective strategies and best care practices for rare disease patients like myself, which then lays a framework for the medical professionals to be interested in caring for rare disease patients that before weren't a profitable category to care for. So this council really has a possibility to make rare disease research easier and more accessible to medical professionals, which then improves the care of patients in Minnesota. This council will also fuel the interest and progress of genetic research and gene research, especially at the University of Minnesota, for potential of gene editing or gene therapy overall for diseases like mine that have genetic base and component. And most rare diseases are genetic in nature, so it's it goes hand in hand with what we're trying to do here. So overall, the creation of this council is really going to be the platform and voice that we need in the medical district of Minnesota for their diseases. So this council overall will help us bridge the gap in knowledge of rare diseases, because most doctors aren't familiar with a lot of them. So I, at 23, still see my pediatrician because I can't find a primary care right now that will care for me in the way that I need. So I'm stuck pretty much just going to different doctors and figuring out who is going to help me the most. But it's, there's no nothing straightforward, so I'm still with my pediatrician. So with all this increased knowledge that the council will help create, doctors will have a place to refer to in the end. So overall, the council will bridge this gap in knowledge and fuel a more hopeful future for rare diseases.
Abby, thank you very much.
Thank you.
You said you were participating in athletics?
Yes.
What are you doing?
I was on the rowing team at the University of Minnesota. I was a coxswain, which is the person that steers the boats. But right now I run for the Muscular Dystrophy Association to fundraise for another rare disease. And I use my crutches when I run. And I also hand cycle and do a lot of other adaptive athletics.
Wow. Staying active.
Yeah.
Yeah. All very good. Well, thank you for being here and testifying. There may be a question later. There's another testifier. Representing.
Yep. There you are. All right.
Thank you, Board Chair, for opportunity to talk. I'm Pam Mertz. I am a mother of a son with cystic fibrosis. He was diagnosed the Ides of March of 2000, and that was before newborn screening, so we did not know what we were dealing with. Prior to his diagnosis, at 5 months of age, he was 10 pounds and losing weight. University of Minnesota doctors said we're going to rule out the big bad one, and it ended up being our answer. Not the answer we wanted, but he has been able to receive the therapies and the drugs that have become available for this disease and be able to live a somewhat normal life. He does an hour of therapy a day. He takes 60 pills a day. He has signed up for more clinical trials than we've kept track of. He signed his first consent at age 7 to participate in a clinical trial because he knew if he didn't, there were not other patients that were going to take his place. He sat in the back seat of the car at age 7 and said, "Mama, I'm so lucky to have cystic fibrosis." And I was not quite sure what he was talking about. And I said, "Why is that?" And he said, "Because none of my friends get to make this kind of money." So that's his tenacity of always looking on the bright side, of always looking to the future and the hope that the University of Minnesota, the state of Minnesota, the researchers, the great minds that are here bring to the party. And this Rare Disease Council is going to allow all of these people with rare diseases, 7,000 rare diseases, only 500 therapies. We have a lot of people here that are not being able to be consolidated to put these brilliant minds together and to be able to have a rare disease council to speak on behalf of these families that battle this every day and have done, you know, a lot of the things that Abby's talking about, grassroots stuff, doing the very best with what you have. Dylan also is just waiting for that cure. He's waiting for that research. Cystic fibrosis is a lot further along than a lot of rare disease. I believe with participation in rare disease councils like this, we can translate that science and benefit many other rare diseases as well with some of the breakthroughs that have happened genetically and looking at the genetic defects. A lot of it's been done here in the state of Minnesota with the research that happened. So I urge you to consider passing this bill.
And how old is your son now?
Dylan is 18. With cystic fibrosis, he was just recruited to play Division II lacrosse.
Really?
So,
very good.
Yeah, good news.
Yeah. All right. Representative Dean, I think we may have one more person who would like to step up here to testify. Sure, go ahead. We'll take time. Welcome. Identify, state your name and then proceed.
Well, I'd like to thank everyone here for allowing me the opportunity to speak on behalf of people with rare diseases. That being said, my name is Dennis A. Martin. I'm a husband and a father of two beautiful little boys, Joe and Leo. Joe is 4, Leo is 2. Joe, by all of our definitions, would be considered normal. Leo, on the other hand, is not. At 4 months of age, he was diagnosed with Pompe. I could spend the rest of my time here telling you about Pompe, or I could tell you what it's like to check into Children's Hospital for 3-plus months. or I could tell you what it's like to have a do not resuscitate plan in place for your 4-month-old. I don't believe that's why I'm here. I'm here today to explain to you why this council is important not only to my community, but to Minnesota as a whole. 1 in 10 Minnesotans have a rare disease. That translates to roughly 560,000 Minnesotans. And that is just the people with the disease. That doesn't take into account all the people that are affected by the disease. I think a fair assumption would be that on average there's at least 2 people that care enough about the person with the disease to be affected by that disease. So you take that 560,000 number, and that now becomes 1.7 million Minnesotans affected by a rare disease on a daily basis. 1.7 million Minnesotans affected by a rare disease on a daily basis. That is a third of our population, and that population is severely underrepresented. I heard Representative Matt Dean speak once at a conference, and he spoke about the mascot for rare diseases. And the mascot for rare diseases is a zebra, and how appropriate it was because no 2 zebras have the same stripes, which makes them all unique. And that does make them a great mascot for us, because I promise you, if you have a rare disease, it is uniquely yours. But what wasn't said about a zebra is this. A zebra is a herd animal. And I can promise you, being a unique zebra in West St. Paul is a lonely place. Being a unique zebra in Ham Lake, St. Cloud, Rochester, or anywhere else in the state is a lonely place. This chamber has an opportunity to take all of these unique zebras and make us a herd. And it's not like this council will be run by a few moms and dads. It'll be run by the University of Minnesota, one of the finest institutions in the land. Right now, the University of Minnesota is starting work on gene editing. The National Institute of Health has picked 2 institutions in the whole country to share in its $190 million pot in this area. One was Harvard, and the other one was the University of Minnesota. This council will be in good hands. This picture was taken a week after diagnosis. I can never fully explain to you what it feels like to be on the other side of this. The confusion, the anger, the sadness are all overwhelming. But you do compose yourself. And when you do, you start to research and you start to look for answers. And although it is too late for my wife and I, maybe the next set of parents that have to compose themselves and start their research find this council. And maybe this council has some information on the freight train that just ran them over. And maybe that brings them some hope. And hope is the only thing you can hold on to in a moment like this. So I ask this chamber, bring some hope to nearly 2 million Minnesotans and vote yes on House Bill 2574. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Dennis, can you spell your last name for us, just for the record?
Certainly. St. Martin. It is ST period, capital MARTIN. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Very good testimony. Representative Dean, or members, do you have questions of any of the testifiers before they go? Very compelling. Representative Zuros.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I've had the unique privilege to work with the rare disease folks over the last couple of years. We had a conference with Chair Dean and meeting folks over the last couple of years. Mrs. Mertz and her son Dylan live in Otsego in my district and have been able to meet with them and work with them over the years, and was at a get-together earlier in the session when Ms. Hauser spoke to the group, and then just thanks to Mr. St. Martin and his words and his message about Joe and Leo, but I tell you what, this is unbelievably close to home, and being a child that grew up with almost more days inpatient than out of patient in the hospital, and being told, I think, the last time we were told that I had less than 6 months left to live, That was the sixth time my parents and I were told that. I just kind of laughed at the doctor and said, "Yeah, you'll figure something out." And they did.
And they did.
And they did. And so my parents in 1980, when I was born with tricuspid atresia, there was no internet. There was no way to reach out to other families. They were absolutely alone. And my mom would tell stories about going to the hospital and seeing another baby with a heart defect that was 2 years old or 3 years old, and she burst into tears because she said, "Oh my God, they can live to be that old." And then pretty soon she was seeing babies that were 7 years old and 8 years old. And so I think Mr. St. Martin hit it on the head when he talked about hope. We got a lot of things to fight about at the legislature, and I hope one thing we never fight about is the unbelievable intrinsic value of hope and never giving up on people. And I'll tell you what, Abby, when I went in for my procedure in January, I went to Minneapolis Children's Hospital. It was awesome because I feel big there. My feet hung over the edge of the bed. I didn't feel like a big guy that often. And it was pretty awesome. But, Chairman, members, Chair Dean, this is a wonderful bill. I'm honored to be able to be a co-author, and I'm excited to move it forward.
Thank you very much. You want to speak?
Yes,
move down to the table, please. We're running over a little bit today, but we don't care. Welcome.
My name is Dr. Ramaya Motiala from the College of Pharmacy, University of Minnesota. I just want to bring it to you. The rare disease is not just located in Minnesota. It's a worldwide, global issue. Right now, at this time, United Nations is considering as a separate issue at the United Nations, rare diseases. And at the same time, WHO is also considering as a event, they are going to do that one. And I just wanted to tell you that there are more than 7,000 rare diseases are known. Everybody knows there are only 5% of them have the cures. Not the cures, just the treatments. It is a very important bill. And the second thing is that this bill is the second in the nation. First North Carolina, second we are. So it is important that we should give the careful consideration for this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for taking time to come down and add some additional testimony. Anyone else? Representative Dean.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I appreciate your time. I also appreciate the rare disease advocates that were over in the Senate. The bill passed in the Senate today as well, so we are very excited about that. And the unique opportunity that Minnesota has to lead again in the country and the world. And not just for rare diseases, but some of the research going on. Dr. Tolar is the head of the School of Medicine at the University of Minnesota, world-renowned genetic physician, just unbelievable Star Trek-like research. You think it's like way in the future, and they're doing it today. They're going in and changing genes, and it's just unbelievable what they can do today. But you also think about this in the future, research that's going on in Minnesota today. Everybody knows somebody, probably many women, with breast cancer. What you might not know is that when you get diagnosed, they put you into bucket A, bucket B, bucket C. Most people are in one of those buckets, and then you get your treatment based on that, and it's kind of generic. We're very good at that and very good outcomes here in Minnesota. But there's also a group of people that it doesn't work for and that you have a rare variant. What we found is that every single cancer is genetically just a little bit different from every other one. And what they're doing in Minnesota is developing chemotherapeutic agents that are specific to one cancer. They're making chemotherapy one kind of chemotherapy with its own genetics for one person's cancer. And that's not in the future. That's happening today. So although we're looking at rare diseases in Minnesota, its implications are enormous and broad across things that are not so rare as well. So I really appreciate the extra time that your committee has given over to this, which is generally from the Health and Human Services Committee, but University of Minnesota and Minnesota colleges are doing great things to help provide hope and opportunity for people who get, as the gentleman said, run over by a freight train.
Thank you, Representative Dean. I would now renew House File 2574 as amended to be referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. And all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It's on its way. Before you get up and leave, members, I just wanted to point out one thing that's in your packet. You wonder where that came from, perhaps. It came from me, because the person who wrote this is my granddaughter, a graduate of UMD. And it's quite amazing what they've done as a married couple. So I just pointed out, you know, it's a goal. Pay your debts. Meeting adjourned.
Okay, in the
what?
That's what it looks like.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Thanks, Dan.